Welcome, and thank you for listening to this recording, part of the Comprehensive Opioid Abuse Program, or COPE, podcast series. COPE provides financial and technical assistance to states and units of local and Indian tribal governments to plan, develop, and implement comprehensive efforts to identify, respond to, treat, and support those impacted by the opioid epidemic. Since 2017, BJA has supported innovative work on these COPE sites across the nation. Funding and programmatic support for COPE is provided by the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, or BJA. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those of the U.S. Department of Justice.
Hi, I'm Michael Kane from the Crime and Justice Institute at Community Resources for Justice, Senior Project Director, and we are part of a team providing technical assistance to grantees through the Comprehensive Opioid Abuse Program funded by the Bureau of Justice Assistance. Joining me today is Valerie Tickle from the State of Delaware Criminal Justice Council, where she is a Criminal Justice Planning Coordinator. The State of Delaware received a COPE grant under Category 4, Statewide Planning and Implementation, in the previous round of funding, 2017, I believe. And today, Valerie is going to talk to us about the State of Delaware's experience with the COPE Category 4 funding and the planning process that Delaware has gone through to determine how to use their implementation fund. Thanks for joining us, Valerie.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here, and I'm happy to share our process and what we've experienced here in Delaware.
Great. Thanks. So maybe you could talk a little bit first about what motivated Delaware to do this work and why you decided to apply for the COPE funding in the first place.
Sure. Really, addiction, it touches the lives of all of our citizens here in Delaware. It impacts individuals, families, and the criminal justice system. So we, as most states in the country, have been experiencing this addiction and opioid epidemic. And we really wanted to look for positive and evidence-based practices and resources that will address addiction and help really improve our outcomes. Delaware is unfortunately now sixth in the nation. So we just rose from eighth to sixth place for overdose deaths, which is really, really tragic. We're a small state. We have three counties. We have under a million people in our state, so we're pretty tiny. We had 316 overdose deaths in 2016, and unfortunately the number is climbing, and we're expected to unfortunately have almost over 400 in this past year. So the planning process is so crucial, and then the turn towards implementation, so right at that crux is really a great opportunity. So we saw COPE as this great opportunity to gain resources and help tackle the dilemma in the state, and that the CARA Act is really bringing the great change across the country. The COPE grant really fit into the parameters of what the Criminal Justice Council does as a state administrating agency in Delaware, and it aligns with our overall goals. And we've worked with the Bureau of Justice Assistance for many years. So this kind of strategy planning and then turning towards implementation was really a natural fit for us. And like I said, Delaware just has got to do better in addressing this issue for our citizens.
Great, thanks. You mentioned that the Criminal Justice Council is a state administrating agency. Can you describe like what that means, what the work of the council is, and what you do there specifically?
Sure. So the Criminal Justice Council is what we call the SAA, or State Administrating Agency. So, and we have other agencies across the country and other states that are similar to ours by design. So the Criminal Justice Council, we are an independent body, but we are under the executive branch, under the office of the governor. We have about 30 employees, and what we do is we look at the entire criminal justice system to make sure it's fair, it's accountable, And we focus on looking at policies and procedures and different things to improve the overall criminal justice system. One of our main functions is applying for grants from the federal government to get resources into the state of Delaware and then in turn implementing them out in our communities. So we really try to see ourselves as a resource for the state, and we definitely look at different areas of focus. We do everything from juvenile work and prevention and education through case processing and working with the courts and the Attorney General's Office and the Office of Defense Services, all the way into victim services. We operate the VOCA grant and different federal grants through the Bureau of Justice Assistance. And then also, my particular focus is in the area of corrections, reentry, substance use disorder, those different areas. So I've been here, actually just celebrated 21 years here with the CJC. So very familiar with 21 years. So and boy, my office looks like it. It proves it every day. So so that's really our function, and we really try to operate the grants, and really we go out and we do on-site monitoring. Now, of course, Delaware being only three counties, that's a little easier for us. But we do make sure that the grant dollars are accurately spent and are going to needed resources that are truly making a difference.
Great. Thanks for sharing. So with respect to the opioid epidemic and how you are all addressing that in Delaware, what kinds of groups and initiatives are also working on this problem in your state?
So Delaware being small, it's interesting how well we all know each other sometimes. I think Delaware is in a fortunate position to do changes statewide because of our size, and we're a unified system, which really helps us. So we have no local court systems, no local jails. It's all kind of state operated. But also with the epidemic and the issue and this really just every time you turned around, there was another story in the newspaper or someone else you knew or some other phone call. A lot of groups cropped up to help. And there were a lot of different people wanting to get involved, and it becomes overwhelming. And we realized everybody wanted to participate, wanted to help make things better. So how do we organize that? And a lot of groups did crop up. So some of the efforts that we put in place, we have a very active governor and lieutenant governor, which is always helpful. And the Criminal Justice Council board, by design, really has representatives of all the major players in the state criminal justice system, the president, judges, representatives from the law enforcement community, the attorney general, the chief public defender, the commissioner of corrections. So really getting the people that can make the change, but also recognizing we wanted people in the communities as well. So we really wanted to take a look at this from a broad perspective. But our governor and our lieutenant governor were very active, and a few pieces of legislation came out, and a few groups were formed to try to streamline and get these people together and make sure we were accurately addressing what was going on. So one of the things that happened is our lieutenant governor put in place and is chair of a behavioral health consortium. So this is really an advisory body that has community advocates, law enforcement, healthcare professionals, and other state leaders. And that group has really done a lot of assessing and getting out, and I can describe that process as well. But they put together a plan, a three-year plan, to look at what was going on. Now, this particular group had a focus of addressing prevention, treatment, and recovery for both mental health and substance use disorder and co-occurring disorders. So it did focus on addiction specifically, but also kind of enveloped the co-occurring situation that we also run into. The other group that's the most strong and active in Delaware is the Addiction Action Committee, and they have a very specific charge to focus on addiction and make recommendations in a very strategic approach to address and monitor the addiction crisis here in Delaware. So those two governing bodies have met, and there's a lot of cross-representation. So they're the main groups that we've gone through the process with. The other pieces of legislation that passed that are, I think, critical to mention, we looked at the gaps through that behavioral health consortium and the range of issues, and then subsequently our governor did put into place some other legislation, and we actually, in Delaware, we created the nation's first overdose system of care model to better transition individuals after an overdose or crisis from an emergency room setting to a more comprehensive treatment for addiction. Some other legislation was passed for better access and education to alternative therapies to opioids, because we know that, you know, there are people that suffer with chronic pain or just maybe acute pain, and how do we go through and maybe, you know, think about how we prescribe and have different alternatives to what we have available to our community. And then the last one was to improve the data sharing of health information, because that's always an issue to better address and analyze the prescribing patterns. So I think that's a lot of the work that's happened here in Delaware.
Do you think that cross-pollination on the groups helps prevent duplication? And, you know, what are some other ways that you try to prevent people from working on kind of the same aspect of the problem? I mean, there's a lot to do, but you don't want to have people kind of working on the same thing across different groups if you can prevent it.
Absolutely. So some of the things we definitely keep in mind are things like that, avoiding duplication so we can really streamline the best use of people's times, because we also don't want meeting fatigue. We really want to get out there and get work done. So some of that was to make sure there were representatives on both groups, or making sure that we share any kind of meeting minutes and things like that with the groups and documents, and then really identifying the roles and responsibilities of the groups and who has which function in this system, in this process. So the Behavioral Health Consortium, like I said, kind of is a little bit more broader, and it focuses more on the mental health and the addiction. And it really really has a lot of active community members and service providers and things of that nature. So that's kind of an area where personal stories are also shared and things like that. So they kind of take the different feedback from those groups. The Addiction Action Committee looks specifically at addiction and also looks a little bit more at the state systems and the law enforcement side and things of that nature. So any strategic plans or any technical assistance that comes in, we're just making sure we keep each other aware. The other benefit is, like I said, we are pretty small, but I think keeping that communication alive and really having access to, like, the director of our Division of Substance Abuse and Mental Health, our lieutenant governor, you know, and really staying in active communication has helped us avoid duplication and make best use of the time, the dollars, the resources.
Great. You mentioned, you know, having an active community. I know that you engaged the community in your planning process for the COPE grant. Could you describe a little bit how you went about, engaging the community and the appropriate stakeholders as you were thinking about, you know, making plans for implementation for the COPE grant?
Sure. So really the work of these groups really helped build the grant application, you know, and the sharing of information was really crucial. the process that happened through the Behavioral Health Consortium was really interesting. They held a series of community listening forums throughout the state. So they held them in each of the counties and in the city of Wilmington and Dover and Delaware City and Georgetown. So they held several of these, and they were in the evening. They were easily accessible by public transportation, ample parking, all those little nuances to think about when you're planning these kind of listening forums or public meetings. You want to make sure you truly get the people out. Now, our lieutenant governor had got in a group, so this was, I want to make sure, it was not funded by the grant, but they got in a technical assistance provider to help coordinate the information from these meetings. And so they brought in an outside person to come in and guide the communication, and it had a lot of structure, and it was really a great process because I went to most of the community forums. I think I only missed one. And the community was very eager to share that feedback. So what they did is they kind of opened up in the larger setting, and then we broke up into several small groups, and they had someone at each of the tables fielding two questions that they had for the community. And one was, when you think about addiction and behavioral health and how the behaviors affect health and how people feel about their health where you live, what's happening in your community? So it was really, what do you see happening in your community? What are your needs? What are your issues? What are you experiencing here? Because even though we're a small state, the situations in Wilmington were often very different than in the lower part of our state. So in Wilmington, we're more of, I kind of jokingly say we're like baby Philadelphia, you know, because that's our closest big city. So, right. You know, it's much more of a city setting. But then when you turn around and go to the lower end of the state, we have beach areas, and it's more of a whole different community down there. And, right. You know, transportation's a little harder. It's more rural. So it was interesting to hear that feedback based on location and based on personal experience of what was happening in the community. The second question was, what is the most important thing that we in Delaware can do to deal with these behavioral health issues and the issues we're facing that were described in question one? So the community, you know, we had the flip charts, and we were taking lots of notes, and then all those responses were compiled, and it was really quite large. There were over 600 people that came to these listening forums. There were over 1,000 responses received in total to the two questions. So there was a very interesting process where there was an email sent, and you could kind of rate the responses, and then we pulled them down and narrowed them down even further and further till we got some specific targets that we wanted to work on. But in these community forums, it was the community, but there were also tons of service providers and different stakeholders. But I think in a more structured way, the stakeholders are also very actively involved in the Behavioral Health Consortium and the Addiction Action Committee and in the Criminal Justice Council. We really, like I said, have got the people that can make the changes. We have cabinet secretaries involved and community representation, and I think that blend really gives you an interesting viewpoint and path forward.
That's really impressive. You know, that you got that much feedback and that many responses and you know, the structure of your process. How do you make sense of all that? You talked about, you know, rating and all of this, but, you know, 600, participants and 1,000, suggestions. I'm sure you can categorize some of them, but how do you whittle that down? You can't fund 1,000 ideas. Right. So what do you do to make it manageable?
Well, of course, we broke it down into some categories. So we would take the top responses and things that were obtainable and realistic that we could, and things that would maybe generate really good change. And then, you know, it's interesting to think about when you go through any strategic planning process. There are two types of things that come up. There are barriers and there are gaps. And a barrier may be a simple policy change. And something like that may be harder to tackle, or it may be easier to tackle. So I think when you look at policies, procedures, and actual practice, you know, getting barriers out of the way, like I said, might not require anything but a review and then a change of a policy. A gap is really something that may be resource related. So it might need funding, it might need, you know, a lot of different aligning. So I think, you know, we keep that in mind, you know, what are barriers and what are gaps. So within the groups, we made some subgroups. And, of course, because, you know, we have the overarching larger bodies, but then we create work groups or subcommittees mm-hmm. that can broaden the stakeholders involved, right? Because if we have also too many in one meeting, it really makes it difficult to move a strategy forward. So it's finding that sweet spot of right. when you have the right people and the right amounts, but then also finding areas where people who still want to get involved have a place and have a voice. So from members of the consortium, they branched out into different work groups, and they chair those groups. There's an access and treatment group. There's a changing perceptions and stigma group. There's a corrections and law enforcement group, a data and policy group, education and prevention, and families and community readiness. So that's what the Behavioral Health Consortium has done. The Addiction Action Committee also has some subgroups, one of which was is also law enforcement and corrections. So we are making sure that in that scenario of making sure they're not duplicative, like what different items they're addressing. So they're in this action plan, in this document that was created, that we have specific things that each group wants to target and how to move this forward.
That's great. That's great. So can you talk to me a little bit about your plan for the implementation funding, how you you have these ideas and you kind of have some ideas of what you want to target. How do you intend to move forward with implementation funding?
Sure. So the Criminal Justice Council, I often joke, we're very popular because we give people money, so that makes us popular pretty much with anything.
Right, yeah.
Right? But I'm okay that I'm popular because of that. So, you know, but it's how do we do that? And the other thing is in the Criminal Justice Council, it's very fair. It's a great system, and we mirror the same process that BJA and other federal entities have in place. So we will, you know, what we took a look at in our planning process, because our planning grant helped provide some staff to organize these different groups and to look at all this information that I just shared. And then we turn around and say, okay, what are we going to do with this, like you said? And when we built our implementation funding grant, we did look at also what are the priorities outlined within the solicitation, and how do they match for Delaware? So it's, you want to make sure that we answer the question for the funder, but then how do we also personalize it for the state? And how do we, like you said, funnel this information that we gathered in these priorities? So we took a look at, and we have established some goals and some deliverables for our implementation funding, and then we will do a request for proposal process. So we will develop the solicitation and then open it up for different entities to apply to the Criminal Justice Council for the funding. So that's a process that we're used to doing and we're pretty familiar with. So we looked at specifically three different areas. We want to assist the local agencies in improving the engagement and retention of justice-involved individuals with the opioid use disorders and treatment and recovery services. So we know that people may start a program and, or, you know, they get to detox and then they're referred to a program, but there might be a lapse and a breakdown. And that's really a window of opportunity. How do we keep them engaged? And then if there is a moment where someone steps away from treatment for a number of issues, maybe there's difficulty in understanding the workbooks or the reading level or different things like that, we want to make sure that we, how do we retain people into treatment that works for them? So we want to open it up to programs that would look at that issue, because one of the things we saw in the planning phase and in the community forums and in the groups and looking at what programs we have currently operating is that's something that's been experienced here. The other thing in, you know, because a lot of funding has come out for addiction and the opioid crisis, so I was very diligent on how do we focus our dollars? How does the CJC look at our dollars in this grand scheme of money that maybe our Division of Substance Abuse and Mental Health has received, and where do we fit? So the nice thing about the COPE grant is it's criminal justice focused. So we could really say, all right, you know, we want to look at this through the lens of how it's impacting the criminal justice system. And one area that wasn't really funded through any other avenues were the law enforcement diversion programs and the alternatives to incarceration. So we also, again, being the size with the unified system, we fall into unfortunate scenarios where our correctional system is our largest treatment provider in the state of Delaware. We don't want that. We know it's much healthier for individuals and for families to have, someone receive services in the community and could be very supportive. And we wanted to make sure that, you know, we have a few operating here in the state, and of course we mirrored them after other national practices with law enforcement diversions. But how do we expand those options and those areas and, you know, the alternative to incarceration and reincarceration? Because unfortunately, if someone's struggling and they're going to violate a probation or something like that, you know, we want to get them into treatment before we've got to do incarcerated treatment, because that drives those different things up in our state for our correctional system. So the third thing was really to reduce the incident of overdose death and opioid use. So, like I said earlier in our conversation, it's unbelievable here. It really is the numbers are climbing, and we want to very specifically focus on decreasing the overdose death. So that's what we took a look at in our grant, and we're going to be releasing our RFP in the very near future. And the Criminal Justice Council, like I said, we mirror a process that other federal entities do, but we do a very structured solicitation where we describe the grant and different thresholds and targets and goals that align with our federal grant. So we make sure that we are staying in the wheelhouse of what we propose to do with the implementation application. So we will make sure that we let any entities that are interested in applying know that, hey, these are the goals we have, and these are the objectives we want to target. So they're very aware from the front end. And then what's nice is we have an electronics e-grant system. I say nice, but some of our community stakeholders really provide us loving feedback on how we can improve that system. But, right, you know, and I say, listen, I get it. I have to write and I have to report what you know, we do to you. You know, we also experience on our end when we report back. So we definitely walk them through that process of having our electronics grants management system in place. But what we do is we'll open it up and we'll let the different entities apply. And I'm going to have the three categories mentioned so they can apply for one of the three categories. And then the Criminal Justice Council staff puts together a review team, and we usually involve neutral parties, you know, somebody who might have experience in the system with this, but then are not an applicant. So someone who's a very neutral party who can come in and review with us. I also always involve someone who has nothing to do with the area, because when you're reviewing grants, you really want to make sure that it conveys what the applicant wants to do. So it's nice to have the seasoned person and the completely new eyes on it. So I think that's just a nuance in how we build our scoring team. And then we take these recommendations back to our board and then implement those grants out. And then, like I said, the Criminal Justice Council does on-site monitoring where we can offer technical assistance and we can make sure that the funds are being spent appropriately. And if they're coming up against an issue, and we can step in to say, oh, well, you know, maybe they have to develop a relationship with the Department of Corrections. And I can say, oh, I can totally help with that. And we can kind of build that rapport with certain providers in the technical assistance way. So that's kind of how we do our process and how we're going to move forward with our implementation of the grant. And, of course, you know, I put in there some specific measures and ones that, you know, I tell people when we're developing these measures, you really, because I do the grant writing training, which I really love. I don't know what that says about me, right?
you probably have something wrong with you if you enjoy doing it.
It's like,
no, I'm just kidding, obviously.
I love the grant writing, though. It's like a perpetual, like, you know, research paper, but I'm like, I'm okay. Right. But grants are different. They're a nuance. They're very, it's a nuanced way of writing, because it's something you craft where you have a problem, but then you have, you know, how you're going to address it and then how you're going to follow up. But I follow the whole with our specific objectives, that they're SMART objectives. They're specific, measurable, ambitious, realistic, and time-bound. So we really want to make sure that when we focus, and it's good for the funder to know, hey, look, we really want to make sure we measure the feedback and return on how these dollars were spent.
Right. Yeah, no, and I'm just kidding about the you know, grant writing. I do it all the time, and I quite enjoy it. It's good to have a break occasionally, but, you know, because, you know, it's good to have other things to do, but you know, mm-hmm. It's always interesting to learn about a new project and to help people to think about how you would you know, create a program based on, you know, the outlines that you're given in an RFP. You know, before we finish up, just wondering, do you have any advice or any anything that you would like to share with folks that are kind of starting to think about this planning process and how to, you know, engage their communities, and how to, you know, move forward with ideas of what you're going to do with implementation?
I would say,
you on the spot or anything.
No, that's okay. I mean, and some of it's kind of the classic, I call it the Wheel of Fortune thing, you know, how they give you certain letters now and then you add them in.
Right.
So some of it's kind of, I would say, classic, you know, open lines of communication. And honestly, you know, letting go of frustration, because there's going to be a lot of groups. There are going to be areas where you find duplication, and then how do you streamline that? But keep moving forward. Really try to take the time. It's nice to be able, you know, in, like I said, the Criminal Justice Council is so broad in the topics and areas we serve, and I've written grants in a lot of different areas, but, you know, taking someone who's got some dedicated time to really know the lay of the land in the state for you as best as you can. Now, of course, I totally recognize, again, you know, Texas would be much more difficult in having that, you know, It's a larger state, but where you can, but technology is a wonderful thing. I mean, my goodness, the way we can connect now is better than ever before. So how, just as best as you can outreach and find out what's going on and how to make sure you really clearly identify the roles and responsibilities. And since there is so much work, there's enough work to go around. There's a place for everyone at the table. I think the important thing was really getting out into the communities as well. I think hearing from people that have been through the process and are seeking recovery or in active recovery are a wealth of knowledge, and their family members are a wealth of knowledge. So I think really staying mindful and blending all those things. And then, of course, there's a process where you have to kind of take that focus. So I would say communication's always key. And I would say just, dedicating the time. And then when you're focusing on applications, be a little bold. I mean, go ahead and say, I said, we seek a 25% reduction in overdose fatalities. Now, some people go, oh my. But I said, look, we give it our good faith effort, and you document what we can, but have that a very clear goal, vision, and then objectives to really drive you forward, and then be mindful of, on the other end, meeting fatigue. How can we really have the best process in place where we can share information quickly and then make sure we keep moving forward? And, in looking at the grants, really make sure, you're ready and you have the systems in place to take the grant on. And the other thing is the know when to hold them, know when to fold them. Like right now we have a lot of initiatives going on and we're getting into the implementation, and a lot of things, there's a lot of great resources out there for implementation science. I've seen some wonderful presentations, and I believe one of them may have been at the workshop for this grant initially a few years back. But look into those implementation science resources and some of the different things that are out there. There's some great PowerPoints out there and how to make sure your plans stay in place and they can get implemented in the vision you had. I think that's a great way to keep moving forward. And since we have all these initiatives going on, we're always eager to find more resources, but we want to make sure we get the ones we have in place correctly and then look for other new resources so we can reevaluate and assess where we're at and what has worked for Delaware and what hasn't worked for Delaware. So, I think that's really the thoughts that kind of came to me off the cuff.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to share your experience and what you all have done in Delaware, what you've learned, and how you went about your planning process. And, I mean, you're right, that you have certain advantages from being a small state, but, everybody has tasked with certain, challenges, and, being a small state can be a challenge too sometimes. Like you said, everybody knows each other and, you have all these well-known players. So, I think, you've done a good job in navigating it and coming up with a process that worked for you all and your communities. And, people can learn about this and think about how they approach planning to address the opioid epidemic and criminal justice involved population in their communities. So I really want to thank you thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you very much, Mike, for having me. I'm always happy to talk about the work that we do here in Delaware and always willing to share what things we have learned. So I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To learn more about how COPE is supporting communities across the nation, visit us at www.coperesources.org. We also welcome your email at cope@iir.com.